Hey everyone, this is Ismay, musician, host, and creator of Finding Lucinda. In anticipation of our documentary film coming out this fall, I've put together an in-depth companion podcast. It delves into the origins and artistry of legendary singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams. New episodes are out every other week on the BGS Podcast Network. So join me on this creative journey.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. I'm your host, Cindy House. Thanks for joining us today. Very pumped to talk to Cora Feeder about her new album, Some Kind of Truth. We'll get to that momentarily. But first, have you signed up for Basic Folk's newsletter? It is the best way to stay in touch with this little folk podcast, and you can sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com once a month in your inbox, and you know exactly what's going on. If we must, you can also follow us on social media at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. You can contribute to Basic Folk, support the operations financially, give like $5 a month, and it'll take care of your listening to Basic Folk, because it's free to listen, but it's not free to produce. You know the whole thing. You can make a contribution at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com/donate. Okay, Cora Feeder. On this episode, Cora talks about her new album, Some Kind of Truth, as well as reflecting on the incredible changes and growth she's experienced since we last spoke in February of 2020. One of the impacts of the pandemic on her music career was the necessity of exploring other artistic ventures like crafting hats and lino cutting. She relocated from Philly to California, finally settling in Detroit. Daughter of songwriter Rita Hosking, Cora went slightly viral during the height of COVID lockdowns thanks to her song In a Young Person's Body. In the poignant composition, she pays tribute to John Prine and old friends she hasn't spoken to in years and captured that lonesome feeling of the pandemic incredibly well. Elsewhere in our conversation, Cora also discusses the passing of her grandparents, who she moved back to California to be with before they died. Their lives and deaths deeply influenced the new record. She opens up about the nuances of her gender identity, the importance of historical friendships that allow for unfiltered creativity, and her approach to writing both personal and political songs. We go through many of the tracks on the new project, including what I think is the best breakup song I've ever heard, Paragraphs. Cora Feeder is a really incredible leave-you-breathless songwriter, particularly with her political writing. Here's hoping she doesn't wait 5 more years to release a record, because we're going to need her. We'll hear clips from her new album, Some Kind of Truth, throughout the episode. Please enjoy Cora Feeder on Basic Folk. Cora, yes. Welcome back to Basic Folk.
Thanks for having me.
You are 30.
Ugh, how did you know? Yes.
Well, because I've been looking at your stuff all day, and I saw... So the last time we spoke, which I listened to that interview today from 2020,
yeah,
before we knew what was ahead, Cora was on Basic Folk February of 2020.
Was that February? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember doing that. And wow. Yeah.
It was late February. We were right on the precipice of what was going to happen. And you had just turned 25. And then I saw on Instagram that you had just turned 30. And a lot of my commentary in our previous interview was how much I hated my 20s. But how's it going? How are the rest of those, like, glorious, uncertain 20s?
Yeah, what a whirlwind. What a different end of my 20s than I thought I was going to get since we talked. Yeah, let's see. I mean, COVID definitely changed everything. Music was my full-time thing in early 2020 and 2019. I mean, I had some side gigs here and there, but it was, you know, driving force of my life. And with all the shows canceling and just the industry kind of canceling, I had to figure out other things to do. So I've been doing a lot of other career paths, but also just artist things that are not music, like making hats and doing lino cutting and beading things. I'm the kind of person who has to have like 15 crafts happening at one time. So it's been a lot of that for the last 5 years, but also songwriting and, yeah, but I haven't put out any music in the last 5 years, until this last March. But I can, let's see, I'm scatterbrained right now about what happened in the last 5 years. I was living in Philly. I moved to California, lived near my grandparents, most of which passed away kind of while I was there, which was, you know, they were very old and had good lives. But that was a big part of the last 5 years, was just saying bye to people who were huge parts of my life. And that's definitely reflected in my art and the songs that I wrote. And so it's reflected on this record. And then moved to Detroit a couple years ago, where I'm living now and loving being in the Midwest.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah. And you're
don't steal,
you're a
don't
Pittsburgh.
Steal all my thunder, yeah, for my questions.
Okay.
Cora. Okay. Yeah. So my pandemic thing is that I was in Pittsburgh for a really long time. I moved there in 2007. I moved to Boston in 2018. And then I moved back to Pittsburgh because of the pandemic, because I wanted to be with my partner, who I am now married to. She and I got married in 2022.
Congrats.
And then I moved back. Thank you. I moved back to Pittsburgh and I was like, listen, lady, I'm moving back here and I don't like it. And this is very temporary. And we were there for 4 years.
Wow.
And now we live in Portland, Maine.
Oh, I didn't realize you were up in Portland. I guess, yeah. Okay, that's cool. That's...
Yeah, come on up.
Wow. I love Portland. Good donuts. I mean,
yeah,
both Portlands, but it's fine. But I like the potato donuts in Portland, Maine.
Right, the holy donut. Yeah. Yes, yes. So the last time that we spoke, we were talking about the fact that you did not really grow up with the television, which is fascinating to me, and I am actually pretty jealous. Our conversation, as I just mentioned, came out right before the pandemic, which was like very screen time heavy. So what was it like for you to use all the screens during the pandemic? And like, what are screens like for you now?
Interesting question. Yeah, I grew up with not a zero screen policy, but I went to a hippie Waldorf school where there's no screens. And then my parents had a TV with three channels that we barely watched. But I did watch a lot of the same VHS tapes over and over again, like The Sound of Music.
What were they?
The Sound of Music.
Sound of Music.
Parent Trap, Lindsay Lohan version. Cinderella 2.
Cinderella 2.
Which I can't even tell you what happens, but there's a lot of mice who talk. That's all I know. So, yeah, screen. I definitely binge watched a lot, like everyone in the 2020s. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much a full screen person now. I still don't have a TV in my house. So I try to keep it to like work and phone scrolling, and you know, but I still find ways to binge Netflix on my computer without a TV. So I don't know how much it really means to not have the TV on the wall if you're still doing it.
Right. Right.
And then I do graphic design and web design stuff for work partly too. So that's on the screen. So I'm unfortunately far more online than my parents probably ever dreamed for me.
Yeah, who could have?
Yeah,
who could have guessed the world would look like this? So also in our last interview, we talked a lot about how you have a global studies degree, and that has sort of like framed your perspective in a lot of ways. In a recent social media post, you said, actually, I think it was your birthday post, you said, "I'm excited to make art and live in the moment this decade." So to you, what are the elements necessary to like write a song for this moment? And like, yes, I am specifically talking about this moment in America, in the world, and with political songs. I think you are very good at it. So I would love to hear like what hopes you have for the future of political songwriting, or like of the moment songwriting.
Like with any song, it has to be grounded in details and some form of your own experience, even if you didn't experience it directly. But the emotions that you feel when you think about it, whatever that topic is. For a song in a young person's body on this new record, which was very much a COVID song that kind of got a little political, I think it's a good example of a song that I didn't set out for it to be a politics song, but then, of course, part of the experience of living in a pandemic is, like, what are your leaders doing? What are your local government and local heroes able to do? And how does that impact your day-to-day? And so there are lyrics in that song that allude to the government not doing a great job and, you know, the state of the world being scary. But then it's also about me drinking coffee with no bra on in my apartment in Philly and, you know, drinking whiskey and John Prine dying and how sad that is and thinking about my grandpa and all these things. So I don't know. I guess the more I write, the more I feel myself writing very, like, confessionally and very just, like, detail-oriented. And so
like
when...
Like a spreadsheet.
Yeah, like a spreadsheet or, like a journal that's just, like, a little chaotic, you know. It's like show, not tell, which is such a cheesy thing. But I think that's like the key to songwriting about anything, but definitely about politics and state of the world stuff too, is like, don't say the world is scary. Say, I looked out my window and there was a bunch of gray clouds, you know.
I looked at my cupboard and there were no potato donuts.
Exactly. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
We'll see. I think it's yet to be seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed that answer. Okay, then for the rest of the interview, I want to dig into the songs on this new record, Some Kind of Truth. It came out March 18th, which was, I think, not a Friday. It came out on a Thursday.
Actually, it was a Tuesday.
I meant to say Tuesday. I've noticed, so you and somebody else released records recently, not on a Friday, mm-hmm. and they released it on a Thursday. So you released this record on a Tuesday. Why did you do that to me?
I mean, this used to be how it was, right? This was the industry. So I'm just bringing it back. You know, some people are collecting vinyls. I'm releasing records on Tuesdays. The woman who I'm working with to send it out to radio was interested in doing it on a Tuesday because there'd be more time in the week to email DJs and remind them that it was out. That was the real reason. And then also it's like nobody else is doing it right now for the most part. So you have people's attention.
There's no fast or hard rule that says like what day you can release music. It's just like what everybody has agreed on.
Yeah. Although I will say I have like young cousins who are in their late teens who couldn't wrap their head around that it was even possible or allowed to release music not on a Friday. So I did have to explain that to some youngsters.
Yeah. It's like Cora Feeder and a couple people from the UK.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking. Releasing music on a Tuesday.
Coast did to me. I will never look like a grocery line magazine. I am not the lonely little girl I used to be. I am a rambling man.
All right, this opening track is so good. Rambling Man. You wrote a little track by track that I am going to be quoting some stuff from. So Rambling Man is about self-confidence as quiet rebellion. And I love this line. I'm truly myself when I'm alone in a crowded suit. No one knows if I'm a woman or a vegetable or a fruit. How does referring to yourself as a man give you confidence?
I've never felt very feminine or aligned with being super, super womany. I've never felt the need to like change my pronouns or make anything official, but I've always kind of felt like somewhere in the middle of the spectrum of gender. So this is kind of a a nod to that. I don't think you need to be a rambling man to embody a rambling man, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Is gender that important to you?
No. I mean, I think that's part of it, like, for myself. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's important that it's not super important, but I really don't think about it that much. But I think more, like, in high school when I was becoming a person, I definitely felt, like, really far from either gender, and especially, like, did not feel connected to most of the girls in my circle and just, like, the things they were interested in, the clothes they were wearing and all that. So I always felt a little bit different in that realm. Hmm. And this song is, you know, about going home to California and kind of confronting that version of myself as I was thinking about moving back to this place where I hadn't lived since that sort of high school era. So I think I was thinking about gender more as I was writing it, just as I was thinking about myself going back to California and what it meant for me to be there in the version of myself that I'm much more confident in and much more secure in and happy in, and how to sort of be that and not let my memories of myself in, you know, 2010 take over.
Detroit summer, I think about the rain, 'cause I'm from California, the driest kind of place.
The next song is Detroit Summer, and you moved to Detroit in 2022, and the song is all about what you were seeing and learning in your new neighborhood that summer. So you have had, like, a few new city experiences. In addition to your time living outside the U.S., you have mentioned in this interview that you lived in Philly, you also lived in New York, and now Detroit. I myself have had, like, new neighborhood experiences a lot of times versus new city. Like, I think in Pittsburgh I moved, like, 8 times while I was there, but I had my own little, like, ritual for, like, getting to know the new hood. So what is it like for you to explore a new neighborhood, meet your neighbors, make new friends, and embed yourself in a community?
Yeah, I feel like in past moves, it's been more like, all right, now I'm in an apartment between 3 other apartment mates, you know, up and down, who I'll probably meet once in the next year. And it's kind of hard to build community in like Brooklyn, for example. I barely knew anyone in my building or street, or Philly, where I was living in, again, like an apartment building. But in Detroit, my partner and I we rented the bottom floor of a house. And maybe it's just the Midwest charm too, and just that stereotypical kindness that everyone here has that is less a thing in, like, New York. But within an hour of us moving in, we knew neighbors on both sides of our house. And one was this little kid. He's probably like 8 or 9. And he came over without his parents and just introduced himself and offered to sell us some of his art. Within like a few hours, came back with water balloons and was like throwing them at our window and doing little dances. So we got to know him really quick. And then the other side was an older guy who had been in the neighborhood for his whole life and had just like all sorts of stories to tell about the city. So we didn't have to go far off of our porch to learn a ton.
Right. They came to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, like, living in Pittsburgh for so long and sort of like, Pittsburgh is not the Midwest, but to me it kind of is, like, being from Boston. And everybody was like that. Like, you knew the neighbors.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was so funny. Like, I lived in Boston for college, and then I lived in Somerville, Mass. A few years after, which are very, like, transient cities. And, like, I knew no neighbors.
Yeah.
But, like, going to Pittsburgh, I'm there for 15 years. And then moving back to Somerville, like, I was like, all right, who wants to be friends? And, like, I could not get any neighbor to hang out with me. It was hilarious.
Totally. Yeah. I consider Pittsburgh of the same vibe as Detroit. So that makes sense.
Yeah, the rust. Yeah. Well, Pittsburgh is like the rust belt. What kind of belt is Detroit? The auto belt?
I guess so.
Motown?
Motor belt, yeah.
Also, I know you feel very strongly about this. What is it like to be close to the Great Lakes again?
It's so good. The Great Lakes are my favorite large body of water, which I think we covered in the last the last interview. Yeah, I grew up going to a little summer cottage in the North Channel of Lake Huron my entire life. And so it's my favorite place in the world. And that's part of why we're here, is to be able to take advantage of that fresh, shark-free, awesome, salt-free water.
How do you feel about that band Lord Huron?
That's a good question. I feel like I haven't listened to them or thought about them in a very long time.
Check them out, because they're named after your favorite Great Lake.
Such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably, listen, get back to me, let me know if it's like,
I will,
completely resonating with you or if you hate it.
There are lots of musicians who write songs about Michigan and just about this region. I feel like more than a lot of states. So
it's a beautiful state.
Yeah.
To leave your lover was ringing in my head. 8 months later, still couldn't tell you exactly why I left. But I know that you knew deep down someday the end was coming. Just maybe not that way, and maybe not that summer. But something about the future in that sweet and sour Brooklyn air had me coming up for breath, wishing I was anywhere but there. Something about my changing country and my changing heart. Something about being 24 and a little doomed from the start.
The next song is Paragraphs. And I have to say about this song, what the fuck? This is like the sweetest breakup song I have ever heard. This is one of those songs, like, as a listener, like, where if you're in it, like, this song is saving your life every day. Little bit more about me. I have never been the heartbreaker, like the person who I think is in this song, who actually might be you. As one who has been the heartbroken, I can really appreciate a good heartbreaker that seems to, like, take responsibility, as you are in this song. So how difficult was it to convey that in the song Paragraphs so honestly?
Yeah, this is my favorite song on the record because it just feels like the truest thing I've ever written. Like, it really encapsulates everything I was feeling and is what I wish I could have said to that person. But obviously you can't say all of this in a breakup conversation. It was a song that just came out really quickly and smoothly after not being able to write about it for a long time. And I was thinking about what I would say to this person if we had the space to talk and I had the space to, you know, write down my notes before talking. And really wanted to pay homage to a relationship that was, like, wonderful and a big part of my early 20s and that needed to end, but was never bad, you know, like, was a loving, good time. And yeah, just how painful that was. And it's interesting that you say that you're not the one, you're not the breaker-upper. I got a really nice email from a music writer who had the same thing to say, and he's like many generations older, and he was like, I don't know why, but this song just hit me, and it gave me empathy for a person who broke up with me, like, many, many years ago, and I sent it to that person, and, like, it instigated him sending her this song and them having a conversation, which was just so cool. And I love that it's connecting with people so much and just kind of
bringing
up stuff.
Maybe I will do
that
when I'm in my 70s, yeah. But probably not.
I know. I was like, that is brave to just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I feel like when you're in your 70s, you're like, what do I have to lose?
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, it seems like Paragraphs ends with like a little bit of like, oh, a Hollywood ending. Like perhaps there's going to be a sequel. Wink, wink.
He was a very good cook. And I felt like it was a big part of our relationship was like him cooking good meals and me eating them. And so it felt like a good way to end it. And I don't see any future with him in a relationship, but I think,
yeah, but
I think
maybe
we'll be,
in the song you did.
I think we'll be, you know, maybe buddies someday and cook something up. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, maybe for the sake of the Hollywood ending, I was, you know, alluding to a little more, but, or maybe in that moment I felt that way because I did write this quite a while ago. And when we meet again in some starry sunset future, mountain scene, I hope we grill up something savory and we end with something sweet. All the corner shops have changed, but the sidewalks are the same. The creek still has little will to flow. Fields still lined with trees, but the mailboxes are green now, and I guess this all means we're getting old.
The next song is Elementary Queen, which is another great song. It's about an old friend from your hometown who seems like, I don't know, this person seems like the friend.
Yeah.
When you were younger. So how has your friendship evolved, and how has this version of friendship help to inform your other friendships?
Yeah, this is about my friend Hazel. I actually just spent a week with her in Portland, Oregon. So we are still friends.
Yeah, Portland. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, and of course our friendship has ebbed and flowed and we haven't always been super close, but she's definitely of my childhood friends one of the closest. And I feel like my favorite part about our relationship is that we're kind of the same as we've always been. Like, we always used to write little songs and poems about people in our class and what we were learning about. And we would invent crazy stories and tell them to people and, like, get people to believe crazy stuff. Like, one time we left a postcard in my parents' mailbox that was from her parents that we had written that was inviting them over to a secret dinner that they weren't allowed to tell anyone about. And they, like, totally believed it and almost went, but we had to tell them last minute that it wasn't real. And we invented a religion that worshipped a popcorn kernel called Bebo, which referenced in the song. And we actually got a bunch of people in the school, like, really invested in this religion about the popcorn kernel. And it turned into, like, a civil war, and it had to be shut down by the school. It was, like, a whole thing. And so we're still just like, she's someone I can go to and just have like the weirdest, funnest ideas and conversations. And we watched some of the Twilight series because that was another throwback to a different era of our friendship. And we hadn't thought about it in many years. And then we were like writing songs about Bella and Edward and Jacob together, just like insane songs that I would never show the world, but that I would only write with her. So yeah, the song is a letter to her, but also just kind of a reminder to be silly and stick with those people who you can be silly with.
Crying yesterday and I cried in my drink. Now I've got tears in my whiskey. I've got dishes in my sink. Cases are rising, goodbyes are shooting up fast. I've got no degree in science, not even a working mask. And
the song. This is the song that we all love. It's called In a Young Person's Body. You started writing this song the night that John Prine died in 2020. It was during lockdown in your small Philly apartment where you were feeling like I was aging a decade a minute. But Cora, we all know that you've always been an old lady.
It's true. It's true.
So you put this song on YouTube I think it was for NPR Tiny Desk Contest entry. And it got some pretty big attention from NPR, from The Washington Post. Eliza Gilkison, who I love and hope that you get to hang out with her one day. Oh, my God. I've never hung out with her in person, but we did an interview for Basic Folk. And wow, you guys would have a great time. Eliza said, I've yet to hear anyone reach this deep to find it and sing it, which is excellent. So lots of attention, lots of social media, YouTube, very nice, but maybe vapid and maybe superficial attention. So for better or worse, what was it like for you to get that kind of attention for the song?
Well, at the time, I was just, you know, living with all my shows and plans canceled in my little apartment with nothing going for me. So this was a great ego boost at the time. And it was just really fun to hear from a bunch of people that it was, you know, made them cry for the first time about COVID or gave them kind of a release of like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm experiencing, too. And I hadn't really thought of it that way, which is always super satisfying. So, I mean, it was pretty great to have people listening and sharing.
No negative feelings.
I mean,
about
the rise.
Are you still up there?
You tell me. I probably not. No, I mean, it did rise and fall pretty quick. I mean, you know, the era was changing a lot, and that was kind of one moment of it. That actually, John Prine died on April 7th, 5 years ago. So it was a couple days ago was the anniversary. Yeah, the funniest part was the Washington Post talking about it. And they called me and we talked for like 40 minutes or an hour or something. It was a pretty long interview. And then they used one quote in their whole article from me. And it was about how I was not wearing a bra around the house. And I was like, oh, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
All I could see was a worried old woman. She's looking back at me. Days like today, everything is crystal clear. The waves keep on breaking. But the coast feels no fear. Grandpa's orange tree is fading in the January sun. He's up in his bed, he can't hear anyone. And I know that'll be me up there someday if I'm lucky enough to have a tree by a bay. We're all living and dying. It's a movie cliche.
Okay, the last song I want to talk about is Orange Tree. It's about moving back home to be near your grandparents that you spoke of earlier. And you said, I was able to befriend my grandparents in an everyday, close-knit way that I'm grateful for. How did that change your relationship to your grandparents? How did it change your relationship to their generation? And also, what you see of your grandparents in yourself?
Yeah, I knew them as a kid who had old grandparents for my, you know, most of my life. And then in living close to them for a couple years, I got to know them more as friends. And that's really special and something that I am so happy that I got to have and definitely shaped my feelings about them, especially my grandpa, who was much more alert and himself for those years. We were always close, but he, you know, we just got to like go bring dinner to his house and introduce him to shows we were watching and play gin rummy and just like do kind of regular everyday things. And he kind of became, because it was such a closed off kind of 2022-ish or still early enough in COVID time that you couldn't do a lot with a lot of people, he and other grandparents were kind of like our closest friends. So that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, watching them pass was also really, I saw two of them, like two of their dead bodies after they passed. I mean, which is like kind of a dramatic thing to say, but that had just a big impact on my understanding of like life and death, and made it a lot easier to process them being gone, because I, you know, knew them better towards the end and saw them go. And I definitely see myself in all of them, or see them in all of them in myself now.
Mm. Were you in the room when they died?
For my grandpa and grandma, I was like in a few yards away, and then came in right after they died and saw their body, basically. It just so happened that in both cases I was not in the room, but I was close enough to be there immediately after.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which side of your family has the Cornish mining?
That's my mom's side.
Your mom's side.
Yeah.
Another thing I did today after I listened to our interview from 2020 is I watched that video of that you made for your mom.
Oh my god.
When she went down and sang in the mine.
Yeah.
It was so crazy.
Yeah.
Have you been to Cornwall?
I have. My mom is a musician, and I used to tour with her a little bit, and she toured in the UK a few times, and one of the times I went with her, we went to Cornwall and looked for a bunch of gravestones and family spots. So yeah, I have been there as a teen with her. It was really, really beautiful. And her last name is Hosking, which is like a sort of like Smith there. It's like everyone's name, even more so than Smith. Like everyone's name there is Hosking. There are whole towns where everyone's name is Hosking, it feels like.
No way.
So it was also just cool to be a Hosking amongst a bunch of Hoskings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to England a couple years ago, and my wife and I went for a wedding, and we were just like, okay, whatever, we're going to England for a wedding, and we loved it. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't get to go to Cornwall because it was too far away from everything, because it really is like, it's like 6 hours from London.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's correct or not. That sounds right. It seemed like way too far, but the places we went were so cute and like very witchy, and I feel like Cornwall is like the witchiest of them all.
Mm-hmm. It's where pirates are from. Pirates of Penzance, yeah. And my grandpa, who was the Cornish one, said there was like family lore that the Hoskings were pirates, and that it totally checks out to me that my mom and him would be of pirate descent. They just have that vibe.
Oh my gosh. What, can you talk about more about your mom's pirate vibe?
I mean, her and her dad both just can get anything done, and you don't, you know, they're very nice people, but you wouldn't want to be on their bad side.
All right.
I don't know. I feel like there's probably a lot of other reasons, but it just, when you think pirate, you think, like you were saying, like cute old wooden ship with lots of little knickknacks and like eating fish and having enemies. I don't know. It's just something about it. It works in my brain.
Have you watched Our Flag Means Death?
No.
Okay. That's a good one. It's on Max, what they call HBO these days. It's really good. It's by the same guy who did Flight of the Conchords.
Mm, okay. I haven't seen that either because I haven't seen anything, but yes. But I know what it is.
I'll email you so you don't forget it.
Okay. She's still singing. Live and die. Who am I?
All right, before I let you go, will you do, remember this, the lightning round?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes, all right, here we go. What is one beauty product you will always bring on tour with you?
Glitter.
What is one beauty trend you'll never try again?
Try again? Lip stain.
What is your sound check song?
My mom always does that. I don't know. I think it's like a traditional song of some sort. It's like, I've been a moonshiner for many long years. I started it way too low. Spent all of my money on whiskey and beer. So I often sing that to sing loud, much louder than I just sing. And then sometimes I'll do parts of, I don't even know. It's whatever I'm writing at that time, honestly.
Mm.
Yeah.
What is your smallest phobia?
I don't like anyone talking about anything that happened to their feet.
What is your biggest pet peeve in music?
In music?
Name names.
People who don't like Taylor Swift, or who think she doesn't deserve the songwriting credit that she deserves.
I knew this would come up.
Yeah, I'm passionate about this topic.
What is your favorite fruit?
Mango.
This is the last one. If you were to design an encouraging bumper sticker, what would it say?
Encouraging. We're all just little tiny baby specks, so calm down.
Really good. Wow. Cora Feeder, thanks for coming back on Basic Folk. Congrats on the new record, Some Kind of Truth. Come to Maine.
Thank you, I will.
Come to Maine and make sure that I can go to the show before you confirm the booking.
All right, all right. Come to Detroit.
Fine, I will. This episode was produced by CJ Nungesser. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can check us out on the SiriusXM app by searching for Basic Folk. Go to Folk Alley's mobile app or folkalley.com, basicfolk.com, or listen wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, I suggest sharing it with your crafty friend. Cora Feeder's music is a great soundtrack to a really fun day of crafting, perhaps your next crafternoon. That's right, send it to your craft sisters. Thanks for listening all the way to the end, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.